head into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
Yes, folks, it's yet another episode of kind of impromptu invites, and I managed to grab a crew member to sit and talk to me tonight about a film that came out this past weekend that is causing a stir among a lot of people. And I am talking about The Happy Time Murders. And to talk about this film that has sex, murder, and puppets in it is none other than the lovely Andrew Shearer. Hello, Andrew. So glad you could join us tonight to talk about this film.
Hi. Well, sex, murder, and puppets are some of my favorite stuff in movies. So this movie was kind of like, I wouldn't say made for me necessarily. Okay, I will say. Yeah, I actually don't know who it was made for if not for someone like me.
Well, and you're a huge puppet fan, Muppet fan in general, though. I mean, you are like an encyclopedia knowledge on this stuff, and you really follow it closely, don't you?
I wouldn't say I have like an encyclopedic knowledge of stuff like the Muppets or Jim Henson things, but I do have like a background from pretty much the time I was born as a fan of Muppets. I think mostly that's because of the generation that I'm from. Mm-hmm. The Muppets were family entertainment for a long time because the late 70s, early 80s was before Disney had their big renaissance. And so Muppets were like one of the top names in family entertainment around that time, and definitely the only name as far as puppetry was concerned. And they are credited with having kept puppetry relevant, as you know, in modern times, and definitely in the entertainment industry. What they did was basically unparalleled, not just in terms of like cultural visibility, but as the art form itself. All the things that they did were just like you know. No one's ever done that, anything comparable with it since in terms of physical effects.
Yeah, not done as well as they have had a history of, and they just keep getting better. I mean, there was that void that needed to be filled because Disney was on the ropes. I mean, they were out looking for anything, including making more mature films like The Black Hole. And was it something The Wicked This Way Comes, too, they were behind? I think it was. But you know, so yeah, the Muppets, I remember growing up with the Muppets. I mean, they were the thing. I mean, you, when you were really young, you saw them on Sesame Street, and then, you know, you had the Muppet Show, which I watched like religiously. And then the Muppet movies, you know, I went to those when I was young, and I remember, the Jim Henson Hour. And actually this kind of relates to the film we're going to talk about tonight. I remember them doing the Jim Henson Hour, and that was amazing. That lion puppet that they had in the beginning, opening of that show. Did you ever watch that?
I did, and Storyteller as well. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things that they were trying to do to branch out from. I don't think they ever wanted to be strictly known as a family entertainment company. And specifically the Jim Henson Creature Shop, I don't think the intention was ever to be like, all we do is things for children's movies, period. I don't think that was ever the case. Jim Henson himself probably could never have gone too far outside of family entertainment just because he was so synonymous with children's television and, you know, puppetry, which is seen as a, you know, an art form for children. So he personally could never have his name, I think, on anything that got too far outside the lines. But I don't think his ever goal was just strictly making things that were like warm, fuzzy, cute, designed to, you know, for preschool kids and stuff.
Well, no, you just look at Labyrinth and Dark Crystal. you know, I mean, that puppetry, well, at least Dark Crystal for sure, you know, it's like, I still remember all the puppets in that movie, and I love that movie so much. But those are the family-friendly ones, but here now we have Brian Henson directing a more mature Muppet movie, if you will. The Happy Time Murders, did you want to give the synopsis of the story?
Absolutely. The Happy Time Murders takes place in an alternate reality of Los Angeles where humans and puppets coexist in the city together, but the puppets are marginalized and discriminated against because they're not seen as human, and therein lies a conflict. The story centers on a puppet character named Phil, who is a private detective, and he was once actually a police detective. And he was involved in an incident with his partner, played by Melissa McCarthy. And this not only haunts him, but has had an effect on law enforcement because he was the first puppet cop ever. And he screwed that up pretty badly. And so when a series of puppet murders start happening, he gets on the case and has to work with her in order to solve it.
Yeah, and I'm going to say right now what surprised me, because I didn't go into it knowing much outside of some of the trailers. I'm like, okay, this is going to be kind of a ha-ha raunchy comedy. And then looking at it, I'm like, watching the film, I'm like, oh, wait, no, we're taking a noir approach to this film. I'm like, okay, you've got me hooked because I'm a sucker for noir. You know, given what we saw with the trailers and that, was that a bit unexpected, Andrew, with the approach that they kind of took with the story compared to what we were getting in the trailers?
Well, STX Entertainment deserves a lot of credit for having bankrolled a movie like this, because from what I know, it took them 10 years to get it made because no one could put up the amount of money that it would take to do this right. And STX, while commendable, their marketing for it assumed that people had never heard of adult-oriented puppetry.
Right.
That anything from Meet the Feebles is very obscure, and maybe nobody remembers Crank Yankers from Comedy Central.
Oh,
but
God, yes.
The Tony, multi-Tony winning Broadway show Avenue Q, which also has puppets and humans, I think they just assumed that nobody knew what that was either. So they sell this film on just hey, puppets are being dirty. And the movie is so much more than that, that I don't think anybody that went to see it was necessarily there for anything but make me laugh, gross puppets.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think people actually were expecting it pretty much straight up. I mean, there is humor injected in it, but at its core, it's straight up old school noir storyline, with your PI, disgraced detective, his partner, him, having connections in the underbelly of the world, which happens in this case to be populated mostly by puppets, because as Andrew said, they're considered second class citizens. So I think that might shock some people right away is how this film starts out. And, I liked it. I liked how it started out, but the whole film, I actually enjoyed the approach. In fact, I think it works better when there weren't exactly all the, though I did laugh, some of the forced humor in here. How would you think it would play out if they didn't put quite as much of the standard, not standard, but the little bit more forced kind of blatant jokes that they had in here? How would you feel? But do you think it would have worked better for maybe people, or do you think it would have worked worse for people who are already hating it?
No one was going to like this movie. It's mm-hmm. too out there. This is not the kind of thing that was going to be embraced. This is not a thing that was going to be understood. It's the first really of its kind. You could compare it in story-wise to something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and you could compare it humor-wise or concept-wise to some of that other stuff that I mentioned. But in terms of a wide-release film in this century, there's no precedent for this. It wasn't ever going to be great. It's just it just had to have the audacity to exist. And right. So therefore, there is no way you could have made this film without it having been based on something people already were familiar with, and have it be something that people liked. They just weren't. What I'm blown away by is not necessarily like, oh, look, you know, the humor. Or, oh, I'm blown away by the fact that it exists. From the moment I saw the trailer, I was like, this is going to sink like a stone. But I'm happy about the fact that it is made. I don't see how anyone thought this would be something that people would like. You couldn't take out the humor because this concept is ridiculous. And it's being made by people that have experience with, I mean, Brian Henson has done adult-oriented puppet shows at the Aspen Comedy Festival from what I've, from interviews that I've seen and stuff. And a lot of this humor comes from that. A lot of the humor is also very Muppety, while adult in nature as far as like the content goes and the delivery, the feel of it, you know, the way that the humor plays out, some of those tags at the ends of scenes and things like that is very, very Muppety. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's jarring for people or what, but if you just played it straight, they would still say it was terrible and stupid. You've got to do comedy as a bridge between concept and content. You have to. Because if you don't have the film laughing or asking you to laugh, people are going to laugh at it no matter what.
So the old additive, you know, if they're going to laugh at you, give them a reason to laugh. Don't just make them, you know, look for a reason to laugh at you.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, this is a bridge kind of a movie. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, the Henson legacy is puppetry. That's it. That's puppetry relevant in modern time. That's all they're trying to do. If you look at something like The Muppet Show, if they just came out with the Muppet Show like tomorrow and it had never existed before, the reviews would be awful and it would be dead in the water after a few shows. Too expensive and people don't get it. It's like kids don't think it's funny and adults are not amused by it and are too like highbrow. It could have only happened when it did, you know? And I think the scariest question to ask is, should this have been done?
I think so. I mean, why not? You know, I guess I'm one of those, especially for something like this, in a world where we've got so much, you know, just CGI fest here, they, you know, they're using technology with the green screen and that, but the puppetry in this was amazing. I mean, Phil Phillips, which I loved the name, our detective, we get to see him like actually walk, you know, like full bodied walking. It's not always just from the waist up or whatever of him bobbing. You get to see scenes like that, but other Muppets as well. You see them walking, you see how they're interacting with live action things to where it's just, it's the artistry alone for the puppetry. It's great, you know, and I don't see why not make a film like this and make it adult. I, you know, people going into it going, oh, this is dumb, this is stupid. I'm like, yet we have films like Sausage Party, which was completely, you know, we had comedies like that. Yet this one is just, you know, 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. And people are saying it's the dumbest movie ever. I'm like, I'm not sure what movie they watched, because what I saw was a really cool film involving some talent. And the fact that the human actors in that as well sold it, which helps. I think you need that. You know, that's what made like the original Muppet movie work, was the fact that, you know, people bought, the actors really sold the fact that these Muppets are here and treated them like they were actually creatures existing in this universe, rather than they're just looking at someone, you know, with a Muppet on their hand or whatnot, you know? So I think the humans help sell this idea, but yeah, no, I think it should be made like this, something made like this. Cause who else is going to do it?
Well, you know? I agree, but I think Cable is the way to go with something this experimental. Definitely because of comedy on the big screen right now is dead. I wouldn't say it's dead, but it is really dying.
Yeah.
You know, there are very few successful comedies made anymore in terms of like, you know, wide release. And so to go like, not only are we going to make a wide release comedy, but we're going to make it with puppets and Melissa McCarthy, who people kind of hate. you know, I hate to say it, but they do. They're like, she's saturated, you know?
She has kind of, because she's been in like so many comedies, in all honesty, it's kind of the Will Ferrell effect.
Yes, and played similar characters to this.
Yeah. And she's played it before, so I mean, we've seen her in roles like this before, but you know, she wasn't full on Melissa McCarthy in this. I thought she did well in this, you know, really well. And it kind of hinges on her selling the fact that, you know, these Muppets are there, because she has the most interaction with them. I mean, I personally enjoyed quite a bit the whole story, the whole bit when they go see the one gangster, the one guy who was a Happy Time Murder member, who's now he's running.
Lyle.
Huh?
Lyle.
Lyle. You know, when they go see him, I love that whole bit. The whole snorting sugar and that. I enjoyed that. I don't know why, but that made me chuckle and smile, you know, a lot. And especially how that plays out later on, where she's talking to the Russian bulldog of, you know, how he treats his women.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was great because the joke in there, they're like, oh, you know, she's got a puppet liver or whatever. You laugh at that. Like, yeah. You don't think she's really got one, but then you find out she does, you know, later on. And holy crap. You find out she's also, because of it, she's like addicted to syrup. I mean, they are like throwing everything into this, you know? I mean, it's not just like they did not play anything safe here. And no. I love that, you know, it doesn't, every joke does not have to land, and who says it has to? You know, when you're dealing with experimental comedy, which is exactly what Happy Time Murders is, it is not about humor. It's about comedy. And I know that sounds crazy, but to me, there's a distinction between things that are going to make you laugh and things and just comedy, period. Comedy is about so much more than did you laugh at it. I've seen great comedies that did not make me laugh. I am looking for, you know, I'm looking for them going for the joke. Well, no matter what the joke is, go for it and be original. And I feel like this was a really go for it kind of movie. And I always respect it. Do you laugh at Andy Kaufman and stuff like that? You know? Like,
not always. Sometimes.
Nobody thinks he's not a genius. You know, well, some people do. But you know what I mean? I think we don't know. We can't immediately say. That's, I think, part of the problem is that people want to make a judgment immediately. They want to have opinion immediately. They want, like, the gavel to fall on entertainment immediately. And it's just not the way art works, you know?
No, it isn't. And I think you could say the same, you know, with comedy as you do horror in many ways. The way I've looked at it over the years is I've tried to make a bit of the distinction because, like you said, there's things that make you laugh and then there's comedy. For me, I think there's things that are horror and then there's the jump scares that will automatically get you the reaction, you know.
It's the same.
Excuse me. You know, and I the same way, yeah, and the comedy in here, I mean, yeah, not all the jokes land, but you're just like, wow, they went there. Like, you know, when Phil Phillips, he starts his investigation and he goes visits the porn shop.
Yes.
and you got the Rastafarian man come out from behind, you know, the back room and the curtains open. and there's an octopus milking a cow.
It's gross.
A video camera there. And I'm just like, wow.
Right. And you ask the question, like, who is this for? Like, who is the target audience? I don't think that was the thought here.
No.
I mean, they really were just like behind this weird ass idea. And you know what's wild about that scene? In that scene, they are, because the whole thing is like there's a show called Happy Time something or other. It's an old like hit show that's now the Happy Time Gang.
The Happy Time Gang.
The people that are the puppets that are being bumped off were all cast members of this show, the Happy Time Gang, because there's this dispute about royalties and stuff. And I think, like, you know, if the rest of them die, or whoever dies, the other people get more.
And get so more money, yeah.
Yeah, someone's murdering them all, and they suspect people from the cast. One of the cast members, and they're all at this point kind of down and out.
Yeah.
For various reasons. None of them are, like, super successful. And the character they're looking for in there is this rabbit.
Mr. Bubbles.
Bumbly Pants.
Bumbly Pants, yeah.
And the person who plays Mr. Bumbly Pants, the rabbit, who is a, you know, raincoat and everything, this rabbit, it's Kevin Clash that is the fallen puppet star that made his name turning Elmo into like an icon in children's entertainment.
Yeah.
And as we all know, Kevin Clash was decades later, scandalized.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw his name in the credits and I was like, holy crap. Kevin Clash was Lyle, and Kevin Clash was Bumbly Pants. You know? How wild. Just, there's things about this movie, it touches so many of the, it's really going for the edges. Yeah. I don't think it's aimed for the middle, which is where mainstream audiences, you know, will make something successful. You gotta hit that middle, and it isn't even thinking about that.
No, there's... No, that's why, you know, the whole time I'm watching it, I'm smiling and I'm enjoying it, you know, for what it is, but I'm just sitting there going, I'm watching a film like this on a wide release. How did they, you know, I mean,
I'm like, whose tax write-off was this?
You know, cause when Phil in that same porn shop, after we get the milk scene, which at first didn't land with the audience when we saw it. And then it just keeps going in the background as they're having a discussion and it keeps going. And suddenly people are starting to find it funny and they're laughing by the end of it because of how ridiculous it and how it ends, so to speak.
Yeah. And what you realize with that, dude, is like some people think they're beating a joke into the ground, but that is not beating a joke into the ground. Lots of mainstream comedies, R-rated comedies, beat jokes into the ground. Because that's their style. That's what they have to do. You know that from that vacation movie you like so much. They just kick those jokes until they're dead because they think that's funny and excessive. That's not, I think, what Happy Time Murders is doing with people to say it is because they say they're trying too hard. That's not true. Those jokes need to go past you a couple of times because the first couple of times it's like, all right, if this was a comedy with no puppets, I would pick that up. But because it's puppets, I'm like, oh, God, there's puppet. You know what I mean? So you're tripped up on that the first time. So them driving it home, but the best example of that in a scene that made me laugh my head off, in an empty theater I'm laughing my head off, is McCarthy's character has just done like a lot of this puppet drug that's basically like super crazy sugar that only puppets can handle. She's been, you know, doing the cop thing. She's channeling, you know, Bad Lieutenant or whatever. Yeah. She's just like super high, and the chief comes over to interview Phil and Edwards, about you know what they gathered from being at this puppet den or whatever, and Lyle is murdered, and she keeps repeating the same thing over and over again, the same conclusion that they've reached, and you're going like, okay, we get it, it's funny, and you're like, okay, stop, okay, why does she keep saying it's not funny? But then the tag at the very end, she says it one last time, and Phil just mumbles like, what the fuck? It killed me. It killed me, that tag. You know, the film is aware of how ridiculous it is, but it is still trying to function as a... These people are not brand new at making puppet movies, dude. No. That's what we got to remember here. Give them the benefit of the doubt. This is Brian Henson. You know, this guy is a master, been a master for a very long time. And the guy playing Phil Phillips, this Bill Beretta. This is like Rolf the Dog, Dr. Teeth. All these people know what they are doing. Like, this is still the forefront of puppetry here.
Yeah, it's a veteran cast of the Jim Henson Company folks behind this. So, I mean, nearly all these people. I mean, it's like they've been in the business for years. They know what they're doing. And you could tell, too, just the way the puppets are handled and everything. You know,
look great.
And, oh, they looked awesome. I mean, especially who was that? The lady who ends up hiring Phil because she's getting threatened. Crap, what's her name now? Totally forgot. The one he ends up having sex with.
Oh, I don't know. I can't remember her name, but she figures into the story really, really heavily in a Chinatown-like twist.
Yeah, which I didn't expect at all. I'm like, oh, wow, okay.
Oops, it was good, wasn't it? Oops, they wrote a good story after all. I'm sorry.
They did write a great story. I couldn't believe they went there. It's like, wow, this is a true, like, all-in story with her twist of yeah. You know, being who she was. It's like, wow, all right.
A little bit of Crying Game, a little bit Basic Instinct.
the little Basic Instinct scene. You know, I mean, you get stuff like that, too, where she did it. And the thing is, folks, they do this interview scene with this, and I'm trying to remember her name. I do apologize. There are a lot of characters in this film. And she, was it her name Sandra?
I think. I'm surprised I remember as much as I do.
No,
I saw it a few days ago.
I saw it a few days ago too, so I apologize with my brain slipping, but, and I'm getting old. But anyway, she's getting interviewed, and Phil and Edwards are looking through the one-way mirror as she's getting interviewed, and she does the leg crossing scene, and you see right up the dress, just like in Basic Instinct, and you see she has purple hair. And at first you're like, okay, that was just kind of a blatant Basic Instinct joke. But the way they wrote this, I thought was actually kind of clever, because that actually, even though it seemed like a blatant parody joke, works into the plot as a major reveal later on.
Yeah.
You know, and that actually surprised me. I'm like, wow, they actually gave it some purpose, which a number of modern comedies, I will go out there and say, don't do that with their jokes. Their jokes are there blatantly for just the ha or whatever, the shock, and they move on. And you're like, okay, what was the real purpose of that? Or, you know, whatever purpose of that scene. And in here, most of the stuff kind of had a purpose to it. You know, although I don't know if the fireman being whipped by a Dalmatian puppet served much of the plot, but I kind of dug the role reversal on that.
Well, that was early in the film, and you're just trying to get audiences, you know, like used to like this atmosphere of you're gonna see anything, we will do anything, and it pumps the brakes on that kind of stuff after a while. But you got to give people a lot of that stuff up front, because the shock of the movie is for most people who grew up on puppets as being solely for children, and that is mostly everybody. Mm-hmm. You gotta give them some time to get used to the fact that, you know, this is what they're seeing. So you give them a lot of that crazy crap up first, and then you start to dish the story and the character out.
Yeah, it does take a turn, and you don't get quite as much of the blatant humor later on, now that you mention it, because we actually get that one of the first, what I consider is probably one of those points where it does take a little bit more of a serious turn, is when Phil is meeting with his brother.
Uh-huh.
And they're having that discussion about his fandom, and that's where we learn about the Happy Time show. And I loved that whole scene dealing with the fan showing up and how they talk about how he changed his nose.
And he lightened his skin. Tried to look more human.
Yeah, I'm like sitting here going, wow, they're saying a lot in this one scene.
Yeah, that was like a very clear Michael Jackson reference for one thing.
Oh yeah, the lighting of the skin and the name.
Yeah,
know,
but then later, you know, Phil many times calls people racist for, you know, discriminating against him or marginalizing puppets. And people do it. They treat him horribly. And, you know, at first I was going like, all right, enough, you know, too much. Y'all are trying to do too much.
Like, yeah.
Just do some story. You don't have to throw in the whole puppets racism thing. You know what I mean? But later I arrived at this conclusion after I, you know, because I was thinking about this movie for a couple of days, and I didn't have it in my notes or anything. But later I was thinking, you know, it's like puppetry is marginalized. Puppetry is discriminated against. Mm-hmm. There is a very set space in the entertainment culture for them, and and they are not allowed to go outside of that. And if they are, that is not for mass consumption. Puppetry, for that is out there distributed for mass consumption, will not be accepted. Doing anything except for children's stuff, and that is evidenced by the Muppets CBS series that seemed to be hated by basically everyone, and that is definitely evidenced by this as well. People don't want it to succeed; they would rather them stay in their place. And when I started thinking about that, and the fact that they weren't addressing necessarily race at all. They were using that as a metaphor for the way that puppetry as an art form is treated by the entertainment industry. I was like, I gotcha. Whether or not you intended that, that's the signal I picked up on later. And I'm like, I feel you, man. That's pretty cool. You watch it with that on your mind or think back to it with that on your mind. It wouldn't surprise me if Henson was thinking about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it either that they're giving a bit of a jab. I mean, with that, that's what I started to get the message on it as well, because this isn't the first time we've tried to do in recent years, a different puppet movie. I mean, it wasn't completely puppets, I don't think, but you had Mirror Mask, which failed horribly. A number of years ago, was it 2005, I think, that came out. You know, Henson's crew, they did the puppetry and stuff for that, and that didn't go over well. And even though it was PG, it was still a darker type story because it was Neil Gaiman. Yeah. And, you know, we've had a few other puppet things come out that just people can't get past the idea of puppets doing more mature things. But then you had Avenue Q, which was very successful for a long time. I don't know if they're still going on, but
yeah, it's off Broadway. Well, I think it's off Broadway at this point, but it ran for, like, if not 20 years, close to it, you know, but yeah. Very successful. But again, there are things that a theater audience will accept that is way different from, you know, 'cause I don't even think there was any, I would be surprised if anybody got anywhere with a film adaptation of Avenue Q. I don't think anyone would bankroll that.
No, not for a wide consumption. Maybe a VOD or a direct-to-video thing, which, like you said, maybe had they done that with this, it would have been a little bit accepted better. Though I don't think they'd be getting to as many people as they want. I think it would have probably been a little bit more accepted. Because people, as I've mentioned before, I truly think people are more forgiving or accept things a little bit differently when they're direct to video or VOD than when they're wide released.
Definitely, you know? With comedy, people are way more willing to take a chance on comedy when it is television, because they'll give it a couple of episodes. You know what I'm saying? Or they'll give it a season sometime or half a season. The whole thing about TV is there's a tolerance for concept to be developed, you know. And a lot of people are like, all right, we're going to stick with it. We're going to see where this goes, because that's television's history. It develops, it builds. But for film, I'm telling you, and especially now, people are just like, give me the sizzle, the steak, and let me out of here. That's it.
No, yeah, what are you giving me this alternative thing for?
Absolutely no. They're just not accepting that, you know, and it's getting more and more narrow, you know, and we are trying to drag people out with some of this entertainment that we've gotten. And the way we've had to do it really is to just, like, wedge ourselves in there, you know. Black Panther's a great example. Established genre, superheroes, established brand, Marvel. There, now we've got it, but there is no... With puppets, the Muppet is the closest thing, and that's generations removed. Kids are not watching Muppets. Mm-mm. You know what I'm saying? It's just not happening. The fan base for Muppets, dude, they're old like us. They don't want this. You know what I mean? And that's evidenced by, I hate to keep referencing that ABC series they try to do, which is like a prime time-ish thing. Go back to the roots of Muppets that were not necessarily aimed at children, but aimed for, you know, you know, a little bit more sophisticated comedy taste or whatever. the Muppets fans mostly in mass hated that, but I loved it. Oh, it broke my heart when it was canceled. It was the only reason I had Hulu, you know. Loved it.
Yeah, it was a great show. I enjoyed it quite a bit too, and it surprised me that it was canceled. I'm like, wait, they canceled that already? I'm like, what the hell?
People want their idea of the Muppets, which has more to do with Sesame Street than the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
It's because that's the thing that was seen the most, Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. I think people now, I mean, where can you watch the original old Muppet Show? It's not on Netflix. Is it on Hulu?
I don't think it's on Hulu.
I don't think it is.
It might
either.
Be on Amazon, but it might not even be there unless you get the DVDs or whatnot. I don't even think.
Yeah, and they only did the first three seasons on DVD too, and they're out of print. I think people are really just have no clue, no concept, and their memory of it is tainted by, oh, this is something I watched as a childhood. They're not going to accept this. You know, they never were gonna, I don't think.
But even the show, the Muppet movie, you know, the Muppet Show, if you go back and look at some of the things they did and some of the jokes they had and some of the character, you know, what was going on, you're like, this wasn't just geared towards kids.
Well, no, Sesame Street was for children.
Right. But so I mean, I mean, many people consider the Muppet Show. It goes along with what you're saying, is their expectation or whatnot, you know, look at the Muppet Show as being. But if you look at that, people hear, you know, see criticism of, oh, they're blowing away puppets, which I thought was hilarious that they actually left them with stuffing. It wasn't red stuffing. It was when the puppets get killed in here, they have stuffing. It's just the simple, straight up, like they're regular Muppets, which I was happy about. I was thought maybe they do some kind of fake, you know, red stuffing or something, but no.
No, and it's a good point to bring up because, you know, Brian Henson is not going to do anything that's going to tarnish the Henson name.
Right.
He's not. And I think going Meet the Feebles with it, with gore, it betrays like a very fundamental thing, but it also says that this movie is not trying to shock people. That's mm-hmm. not the idea of it. It's a movie. It's just a movie. It's just really high concept, but that's kind of the game they were always in. You know, the very idea of a puppet variety primetime series is high concept. That high concept is their game. You know, think about The Dark Crystal.
Oh man, that was
an all puppet fantasy. Like, it amazes me that was even made. You know what I mean?
And not only fantasy, but it's dark fantasy. I mean, there's some themes going on in there and stuff that happens that you're just sitting there going, holy crap. And you forget you're watching Muppets. You're into these characters, the way they handle that film. And it's such a beautiful, dark movie that's got disturbing imagery, but that's the film they're making. Who says you can't use Muppets to tell a regular story like that? Why? Yeah. And why regulate them to children? You know,
it's true, dude. And by the end of Happy Time Murders, where they're like, you know, going through the building or whatever together, and it's Phil and McCarthy, puppet and human together. The way it's shot, the way the music is, the way their performances are, you do lose yourself in. I don't care who you are, you're not sitting there going like, this sucks. It becomes like a real ass cop police movie by that point. I really felt that way when I was watching it.
Oh, especially when they go find the last two surviving members of the gang after everybody gets killed, and they're in the car, and they have that scene where it's played the music, and feels like, what are you listening to? And she ends up pulling out the gun and shoots the console, and they have a moment where they laugh and everything. You're like, oh, wait a minute, she's talking to a Muppet. You forget that Phil is a puppet after a while in this film.
You do, and that Bill Barrett is so good. And there's a scene where they come upon the inbred children, these little puppets.
That was
amazing.
I know, they came in, he busted that room because they thought a girl was screaming, and here are two children puppets, it's one like, has one eye.
Yeah.
What is three eyes? And he's just like, oh.
It's like out of The Hills Have Eyes or something, but it's so well played and it makes sense in the story and you're going like, whoa, you know what I mean? And you could say that like they threw too much in here, But I think really you can't just watch it once and make your mind up. You got to look at like the fact that it even is happening is just the headspace it's throwing you and it's disorienting. And I think a lot of these bad reviews that have come out, a lot of these like snap judgments about it are really just like you can't. If there was already a bar for a movie like this, it'd be one thing if you could just go ahead and say, well, it's not good.
Right.
But it's not good compared to what?
Yeah.
You know? What scale are you judging this on? You know?
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know. I'm not really sure what people expected going into it. Because, you know, and we talk about Melissa McCarthy, but the rest of the human cast I thought did well. I mean, we have Elizabeth Banks show up in here, who, yes, was involved in a human puppet relationship. Which, you know, Elizabeth Banks, so way to go, Phil. But no, just kidding. But I loved that angle, and then how she plays into the twist later on. I'm like, wow, okay. You know, but the one character who I think people kind of miss in this film that I loved was Maya Rudolph's Bubbles.
Gosh, she was so great, right?
Oh my God. She was hilarious and so just perfect the way she plays that character, you know. And she even, they even gave her something to do at first to where she wasn't just the secretary behind the desk. But you get that scene, the woman who hires Phil as a PI to investigate the threats, her name was Sandra. There's a scene which will make you not look at Silly String the same way ever again. There's a scene with Phil and Sandra going at it, and the cops come in and everybody's kind of waiting for them to be done. And as Phil hits the happy moment, she just casually pulls out a spray bottle and rag. And for some reason, I was just rolling at the way she did that. But, you know, she does a lot of things in this film. She picks locks. You know, she helps Edwards do an investigation. I mean, I really dug her role in this. And when in the beginning of the film, I wasn't quite sure, you know, what they were going to do with her character. But I was surprised of how they ended the film with her character. But it fit within the noir genre.
It did. You know? Yeah, it did. And as a fan of that stuff, I'm sure you dug not only the way that she was, the way that she played it, which is exactly out of one of those movies, but the way that it ended as well, tied it all up with her relationship with him, just was just I felt note perfect for that particular genre.
Oh, I was hoping that's the angle they would go with it, you know, with her, because it's like that's your classic, you know, hard-boiled noir, hey, you know, she's right under your nose type of thing. Yeah. You know? But yeah, I liked her character, and yeah, this film, you've got no comparison, and maybe that's what people have an issue with, is they're trying to compare it to other comedies and other things, and maybe some of the gratuitous, you know, the gross foot humor you have in here, you can, but overall, the way this film plays out and how they approach it, there really isn't the precedent for it.
No, there's not. And you can't use like preset like benchmarks to measure something that's, you know, that's this out. You just, it's not fair to the art. It's not fair to what's going on. And really, it's like not fair to any of the people involved either. It's Melissa McCarthy's lowest opening weekend of her career. And I think that considering how much money was involved, how much money she was paid, what I don't want to see is people going like, I regret doing it. Or, you know, that's a bad movie or something like that. I don't want that to be the legacy of this thing. I want people to be behind the fact that someone did this in an area where there's no wiggle room for being out there in terms of mainstream entertainment. It is not there anymore. You do not get that chance. Look at the list of movies released. If it's not a franchise, if it's not a sequel, if it's not an adaptation of something that's like something else that it came out, it's just not embraced, if it exists at all.
Yeah. Yeah, you're lucky if you break even with some of those films. if it's not part of an already established names. It's why, as much as we don't like Cena, we see so many reboots, remakes, sequels, you know, because it's an established form and your mainstream movie audience, that's what they're paying the bucks for.
Yeah, yeah. So, like I said, I can't believe they did this. But I'm happy about it. As a fan of the Muppets, as a fan of puppetry, as someone who supports Henson family and definitely wants to see their legacy continue, in order for any of it to like change and grow, you can't just sort of like caretake this thing that your dad did. You know, I don't know anyone who just wants to be, you know, if they own like a family business or something like that, who wants to be under that? What artist wants to be like that? You know, I saw this great interview with Brian. And the interviewer asked him, among many other really hysterically funny questions, they're like, what would your dad say? And that's, I think, what everybody kind of wants to know that realizes who made this.
Right.
What would Jim Henson think? Not Reverend Pastor Henson. Okay. Jim Henson. And he just said, you know, he would probably think I was a little crazy for doing it, but he would be jealous of me. And he would say, you know, I would love to do something like that, but there's no way I could. And that's true. But this guy is not his dad.
No.
And he's got room to do it. And I'm really like, I really respect him for giving it a shot, you know?
I give him respect for giving it a shot. I appreciate the sheer volume of work that had to go into this. I mean,
yes.
Cripes, that scene where we mentioned it within Lyle's den. There's like at least 15 puppets in that one damn scene.
That's right. And there are people under that stage, which means the human actors are above them. Everything has to be built. You and I have talked about CGI sometimes before. Oh, yeah. You know, we're in the era where no one appreciates practical effects.
Yeah.
Puppets are a freaking practical effect. And you look at the reviews for this thing and just like bad movie done. And you're like, oh my God, are you kidding me with that? If you are on the set of this thing, what says bad movie to you? If you know how it is made, what is bad about that? And one could say, well, look what you did with it. Mm-hmm. Trash. That is so narrow-minded, man. It just really, you're seeing one very small part of this whole picture. I am blown away by what I find to be still an advancement in puppetry. And if nothing else, it's keeping it alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it at least sparks some people's interest, I think, still in it.
The people I know that liked it, they loved it, you know?
Right. Yeah,
but even if you left with your mouth hanging open, I'd say, you know, you're going to remember it. We're talking about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and in my review, I said that, you know, it's not a perfect film by any means, but it was nowhere like what people are painting it. And if you look at the artistry behind it, this film is just, it is standalone. You know, it unfortunately may be one of a kind on the big screen. I wish it wouldn't be, but it probably is a type of film that I was really happy I got to see it in an audience that there weren't many people in there, but the people that were in it, we were all laughing.
Yeah. We were
all having a good time.
Yeah. 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 Well, I think what this movie proves, and I love it when people put out crazy stuff. I said it when I saw Mother, and I said it when I saw Only God Forgives, and I'll say it with this too. Movies that are not being talked about in the same conversation as Happy Time Murders, I assure you. But it proves that people who say nothing is original anymore, and why is Hollywood so lazy, and why does the movie industry keep doing the same things? When somebody does something radical, they hate it.
Yep.
So there is no credibility to that argument that there's nothing original, nothing new. When someone tries, and I consider this a try.
It is
a great try. An audacious effort. It is not only met with, like, you know, disinterest or disdain, but I think people actively want to see it die. They want to see it crash and burn for having that audacity that they claim to want in entertainment.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people, it is entertainment, but I think I've mentioned this before. I apologize for repeating myself, but I, you know, people forget film is actually an art form, not just an entertainment form. I think people kind of forget that. So you get films, like you said, that try to do something different. They're trying to be outside of the norm that you are getting. Like you get films like Mother and like this. And, you know, it's one of those things where people are like, oh, well, that's not what I was talking about.
Yeah, no, they still a mass audience when you're dealing with paying your star, you know, upwards of $15, $20 million. When you're talking about marketing, when you're talking about a production itself that is, you know, $50 million to make, you can't mess around. You have to aim for mainstream with that, you know, which is why it blows my mind that anyone thought this should come out. You know what I mean? Like, I think it should have been made, and I'm happy it was made. I'm so happy it exists. But I'm like, who thought this would succeed?
Right.
You know, like, who? It to me, just like, it's wild. And I would like to know what that discussion was. Like, all right, how much you think this baby's going to pull down? You know, what kind of rave reviews, what kind of rabid fan base is this going to create? God, there's at no point when I saw that poster, when I saw that trailer, no point did I think this is going to go over with the mass audience, because they aren't there looking for art. They're looking for familiarity. And when something is unfamiliar territory, they just not like historically, but contemporary audiences are not wanting to experiment.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump on you. You're talking like that. I was just going to say, this is something that you would expect to live within the film festival circuit, you know, the big name ones, for a little while, which it did, and then go direct to video.
Yeah.
you know, have a distributor buy it and go, okay, and they'll do a promotion thing for it, but it would go direct to VOD and all your major streaming, and then eventually to Blu-ray, DVD, and kind of bypass the widescreen. It'd live in festival land for a while, because that's where you're going to get at least a few more audiences, I think, that would appreciate what went into it. Because festival, on the whole, usually film festival crowds like that, I think are, some of them at least, are a little bit more open-minded to
things.
Yeah,
they're not coming to see some Hollywood thing. And, you know, this is probably the best weekend they could have had to put it out, honestly, because you had Crazy Rich Asians last weekend, and you knew that was going to be a big movie. I knew it was going to be a big movie. And so the week after it, it's a great spot to go out. There's really no competition to speak of. A lot of little things coming out, but nothing really, you know what I mean? If it was going to succeed, it would have succeeded the weekend that it did. It did not. No one's surprised by that. The bad reviews of it are not surprising. Nothing. I mean, none of that shocked me. The only thing that shocked me was anyone put up the money for it. I'm glad they did.
So am I. And let's just say that the same people who are shitting on Happy Time Murders are enjoying and loving the hell out of The Meg, which I will still not understand. But that's just me.
It looked like a lot of other things. You know?
Yeah, probably that's the whole reason. But I'm like, leave the big shark movies to Asylum. Anyway, I think we'll wrap it up here with Happy Time Murders. I dug the movie, and actually it's one of those, the more I think about it, I want to go back and watch it again.
Oh, I can't. If they were selling it in the lobby, I would have bought one.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. You know, because I know there's things I probably missed. And after you do get through that first little hurdle of things, and you settle down a little bit, and the film kind of settles into its story, it's a fun movie. I really am glad someone made it, though. Yeah, like you said, Andrew, it was not destined for for, you know, big box office.
Yeah. But it, you know, it just, it's a reflection of the times in terms of comedy. People just really, comedy's just not a big genre right now. It's not a moneymaker. It's not wise to make big investments in it because there are very few marquee comedy names. And so, you know, if it's not something like a Lego or a Kevin Hart or something like that, it's just, you know, it's just, there's a good chance it's not going to do much of anything. But for the comedy audience to not be there for something that's out there, God, comedy of no other genre other than like science fiction, you know, should be like willing to, you know, to be like, to laugh at something. That's so sad to me. But, you know, not unlike comedy, you know, sci-fi has been diluted so much with the action genre that look at Annihilation, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
And yet people are like, what? So I'd blame the marketing a little bit on Happy Time Murders, but mostly I blame people. It's mostly, but it's just not the time, you know, not like it is.
Would you say comedy is probably a dying genre of sorts because of the culture that we live in now? And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm just saying that comedy is not sure what to do with itself anymore because they're afraid of offending someone out there. I mean, because you think of the comedies of the 80s and 90s, and yes, many of their jokes were inappropriate, but at the time, especially many people, I mean, they were hilarious films, but you go back and look at them going, oh wow, they went there. And now most of your jokes are regulated to sex jokes.
Yeah. True. No, and most of the funniest movies I've seen, quite honestly, in the last few years, the little hours, I would say probably the funniest, like R-rated type movie.
Right.
But most of the funniest movies I've seen are movies for kids. I think like Shaun the Sheep, the movie, is one of the funniest movies the last 10 years, period. Just that's the way it shook out. I think on the big screen, absolutely. But in terms of like television, theater, stand up, it's fine. Like it's people are, you know, it's people are laughing at it. People are looking for it. They're checking it out. They need it. And it's a lot of really interesting things are happening with it. But in terms of like Hollywood, no, it is not happening at the moment.
No. And like it's the few comedies I've seen, the modern comedies, I normally don't go to them because the few I've seen in a couple recent years really just were like, oh, you know, I was like, here we are, you know, Chips was, I just, oh man, that one was tough.
They kind of don't know what to do with it. So anytime somebody does hit on something that works, like Girls Trip, for example, which is hysterically funny.
Right.
They could not put out a Girls Trip 2 fast enough. You know what I mean?
Right.
Could not come out fast. As soon as I was at a Girls Trip, I was like, God, I want to see them again. You know, and I'm sure we will. But then, of course, you see someone like Tiffany Haddish in absolutely every movie. They did it with McCarthy after Bridesmaids, you know? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Did you get any trailers before your films? I think I saw two trailers with her in it beforehand. I forgot which ones it was, but
Night School.
Yeah.
Night School. Or Night Class or something like that.
With Kevin Hart.
Looks great. But yeah, again, nothing different about it. Let's face it.
No, it looks like it follows kind of that normal formula.
Nope, it's going to go down easy. People are going to love it.
But this film, actually, I think this film might do better in rental when it comes out.
Oh, sure. You know, it's less of a, I can't imagine people in masks seeing the trailer for it and going like, oh man, Friday night, we are leaving the house. We are going to pay this exorbitant ticket money. And we're going to get that popcorn and candy. We're going to go through all you go through to go out to the movies these days and watch this. I can't imagine that conversation transpiring, like, you know, for the average film goer.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't either. That's the other movie. I saw the trailer for both Night School and Nobody's Fool, which both had Tiffany Haddish in it before this film.
Yeah, and that one, The Oath, looks really interesting too. But again, you know, she's extremely funny, and you could tell the writers of Girls Trip liked her the most.
Yeah,
she got most of the greatest jokes, and so, but that's the only way they know what to do: make more of this. You know.
Yeah. So there you have it, folks. Happy Time Murders. Hope he gave you a little different perspective than all the hate that seems to be dripping out there for this film. Destined probably to be a cult film that's going to be visited years later. People are going to look at it, and you know what? It might grow in an appreciation later on in years. Unfortunately, not now. And I guess we'll just end the night with, do you see something like this ever happening again, Andrew?
No, they're wanting to teach these people a lesson. That is, don't color too far outside the lines. You know, I don't think it's happening.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think so either, at least not on the widescreen.
No.
You know, maybe direct-to-video or in the indie scene or whatnot. I mean, you've had this in the past. We had Meet the Feebles, which is the most popular one, but an indie filmmaker, Dustin Wade Mills, did the Puppet Massacre, I believe it was called, or something along that lines. That was one of his first films, which basically involved puppets dying and such. And so few and far between do we get films like this, but I have a feeling they'll be explored later on. Yeah, and I agree. I don't see us ever getting another film like this. At least on the
they should have like CSI Puppet Town, you know.
Dude, like, that would
taking an established thing that people at least got some kind of context for, and then throw any of that in there, you know.
Do one of your cable limited series episode ones where it's a serial, it's a crime drama.
Yeah,
with Muppets, I'd see that. I want to see. Yeah. Unfortunately, I want to see more of the Phil Phillips character.
He was fantastic, man. He, God, who did he remind you of? What actor did he remind you of?
I'm not.
There was
sure.
Somebody like really specific that I was thinking of when I was watching it. Now, the name popped into my head while I was watching it in the theater. But damn, if I can't think of it now. But he seemed like
of maybe Stacy Keach.
close, but not quite, and not quite Dan Hedaya either. He was somewhere there. Maybe it's just because I recently rewatched Blood Simple, but oh, God, he was almost like right on as a, and I'll think of it after we're done recording, I'm sure.
That's okay. Well, thank you, Andrew, for discussing this with me tonight. There was a lot here, and I'm glad you came on and talked this, because I wanted to give a different perspective to those out there who are just seeing nothing but the negativity behind it and going solely by the almighty tomato meter, which, yeah, I've got opinions about, which I'll just keep to myself right now. But we will have the part of the show right now where my guest will tell you about stuff he's working on and where you can find more of his stuff. So, Andrew, go ahead and you've got a license to shill, sir.
Oh, hey. Oh, nice. I like what you did there, dude. That's a new one. Thank you for asking me to do this. I'm a, you know, diehard Muppet fan from childhood, so I'm always going to have stuff to say about things like this. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that. Here in Athens, Georgia, my friends and I make movies under the band of Gonzorific, GONZORIFFIC. So if you want to watch our movies, we get paid on Amazon Prime a whopping 6 cents an hour. If you watch our movies, you can go to amazon.com/V/Gonzorific and just, you know, watch some of our stuff. Give it a chance. We do no budget micro cinema. Maybe you'll laugh at it. Maybe you won't, but just leave it playing all the time, if you don't mind.
Just put it on repeat in the background.
Please, by all means, please do.
Help support that indie cinema, folks. It so deserves it. So
come on, you know you want to watch Space Boobs in Space. We made Space Boobs in Space.
With a title like that, you can't go wrong between that and Dr. Humpenstein's Erotic Castle.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, man. See you, folks. Check it out.
make sure you check that out, folks. Check out all our stuff on our channel. I've got a Patreon as well in case you're inclined. I'm cheap and easy. There's always a lot of stuff there as well. So we thank you. And now, yeah, let's just say goodnight.
Good night.
Yeah. Hey, all my friends out there looking for more spoiler room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive spoiler room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on to Twitter at Special Mark Pro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the spoiler room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the spoiler room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.